The Daily Connect Podcast.
Hello, it is Monday, the 24th of September. This is the Daily Connect Podcast. Good to have your company. Coming up today, we are going to meet Terry Robinson, who's involved in amateur radio. He tells us how he got into it and also how he's using it to promote RNIB in its 150th year. Also, a harrowing story from one of our producers who found an incredible story online about a charity that looks after blind dogs. Yes, well, I know we talk a lot about guide dogs and how blind and partially sighted people really need those animals. But what about blind dogs? What happens to them when they lose their sight? Well, we're going to hear about one charity that is trying to stop the practice of just destroying those dogs because they're blind. So that's coming up today, plus lots more. But first, we are going to meet Dr. Nigel Best. He is from Specsavers. He's a leading optometrist there. And he's telling us this National Eye Health Week why getting your eyes tested is so important, and also why he thinks some people just don't get their eyes tested.
We have sort of asked the question, and there are a number of reasons. People don't have enough time. People are concerned that if they go and get their eyes tested, that they're going to have to maybe purchase a very expensive pair of glasses. So I think there are a number of barriers. I would say, though, that booking an eye test is very easy. You can book an eye test online with Specsavers. You can ring up a store. Eye tests don't take long, typically 20 to 30 minutes. And even eyewear, if you need any, is very, very affordable. So there are a number of barriers, but I think once people sort of get over that and go in and get their eyes checked, they'll realise that their concerns are unfounded. As part of a sight test, an optician will examine the back of your eyes. They'll be looking and examining your blood vessels. They can see signs of high blood pressure, diabetes, cholesterol. Just recently, a colleague of mine was examining a 12-year-old boy and identified some changes on the retina, which turned out to be leukemia. And for all intents and purposes, that was a very healthy child who's now receiving treatment. So yes, eye tests do go well beyond just checking for eye conditions. Anecdotally speaking, it's not uncommon for patients to come into me and say, "This is awful. I hate having my eyes examined, and I'm absolutely terrified." And of course, we do everything we can to put their minds at rest. Eye tests are fairly non-invasive. There's nothing which is too unpleasant, nothing which is too painful. But I think for some people, it's more the fear of what the eye examination might show them. Maybe they've had a friend or a relative who's had their eyes tested and maybe was told, for example, they have cataracts. And the patients might be scared, if I go and see the optician, what are they going to tell me? And again, I think my message would be, if you do have a problem with your vision or more so with your general health, then it's important that these are detected early to allow treatment to begin at an earlier stage.
Thanks, Nigel. And lots more to come on the Daily Connect this week on National Eye Health Week, which runs the entire length of this week.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
Now time to find out about a man who's been involved in amateur radio for some years now. Terry Robinson is on the line with me. Good to have you here, Terry.
Yes, indeed. Thank you.
So you are an amateur radio fan, that's fair to say?
Indeed, yes. I've actually been an active radio amateur for over 50 years now, having started at school. And in fact, it was very good at school. It was a hobby I got into. And I would say the beauty of it was that once I'd actually got on the air communicating with people all over the world, really, nobody needed to know or care that I couldn't see. And as a teenager, I was a bit self-conscious meeting people and the sort of stigmatizing attitudes that some people took. And of course, I got away from that through amateur radio.
That's very interesting. So it was a kind of a way of escaping the world around you a bit.
Indeed. Mm. And it was a very good way of being an interesting, fascinating hobby, as well as, of course, boosting my own self-confidence in dealing with other people. Plus, of course, growing my knowledge of geography and what other people did and technical issues. And to some extent, that was instrumental in me then going on to university and pursuing an engineering career.
Well, I mean, that's interesting because, I'm a radio guy, but I tend to talk out the way and get very little back because of the nature of the kind of radio that I do. But it's very interesting. It must be fascinating to speak to people. How far and wide does this go?
Well, at the moment, not very far. Conditions are absolutely rubbish. We're at the minimum of a sunspot cycle. Now, this tends to be typically an 11-year cycle, which peaked in about 2013. And so now, if you can imagine that we're now coming to the end of 2018, it's about as low as it gets. So it's not that good, but there again you get some pleasant surprises. So we can still contact America and Australia occasionally, New Zealand occasionally. And, of course, depending what frequency you're on, I mean, we're allocated various frequency bands from just above medium wave to just below, well, way above broadcast VHF, UHF.
Right,
but
okay.
I personally only have up to VHF.
I guess the naive amongst us, me in particular, thinks that, you know, you would only ever speak to truckers or, you know, people who are...
That tends to be CB.
CB, right, so is that different?
Now, that's not to say there aren't truckers who are also into amateur radio.
Right.
But it is I wouldn't say that one is actually superior to another, although obviously that kind of, you know, us and them culture is one that... people like to adopt. I personally think that they're different. The different aspects of a communicating hobby.
But who do you talk to on it? Who do you end up speaking to?
It can be anybody. I mean, King Hussein of Jordan used to be a radio ham.
Wow.
I never spoke to him myself, but yeah, he was quite active, and I don't know whether any of his children took it up, but yes, he was very active. And he went to Harrow School as a youngster, and he developed quite a relationship with the local radio club in Harrow. I used to live in Harrow at one time. And although I never met him, he would actually sort of visit from time to time and donate equipment to the local radio club.
Wow.
And that was King Hussein.
That's
so anybody and everybody, you'd be surprised.
But the reason that we're talking to you today is because you want to do something a bit special.
That's right.
To celebrate RNIB's 150th anniversary.
Indeed, yes.
What are you doing?
Right, I'm going on the air. That's the plan.
Okay.
The Ofcom have allowed me to use a unique call sign, which it is at GR150NIB. So that's Golf Royal 150 National Institute Blind. I have that call sign at the minute from the 1st to the 28th of October, although I'm trying to get it extended to the 31st so as we can get the whole month in. And I'm going to try and contact as many people as I can, commitments and everything else permitting, and of course basic needs of eat, sleep and whatever, as many people as I can to raise the profile of RNIB and introduce them to our 150th anniversary celebration. Now, in doing this, I do recognise that RNIB is a UK charity, and so I will, in as much as is practical, be interested in contacting UK stations. So that means the frequencies I'll be operating on will tend to favour that, but then I also understand, you know, a need to sort of do it to go international. And so there will be a certain amount when I'll be looking to draw worldwide attention to this.
Yeah, because RNIB does have an international presence and certainly
does.
Is well recognised around the world.
It does.
I mean, it's incredible. Do you meet a lot of other blind people on there? I mean, have you met other
blind
people?
Well, you don't tend to know. You see, it sort of comes out through other things.
Of course, yeah.
We have an email list, Blind Hams, where most of them are American, but there are quite a few Europeans, one or two Australians, Canadians, and of course UK. The clubs I belong to, the sort of international clubs. I mean, there are a few other blind people in there, but you know, we don't sing out, "Oh, look at me, I'm blind." No, I mean, sometimes it comes out in conversation. Sometimes you just find out. But they are out there.
Yeah, because, you know, contrary to popular belief, blind people don't walk around and just tell other people that they're blind all day.
No, well, you can't avoid it to some extent,
yeah,
if you,
yeah,
need a dog or a cane or something. But and that inevitably draws attention. But there's no need to draw attention on the air particularly, unless somebody asks the question, which for whatever reason you can't answer. Or sometimes you actually are telling somebody about a particular experience you have, or how you experience something, or how you manage something in a different way than they might. I have talking, I've one talking meter, power meter, and I also have one that sends information to me in Morse. And every now and again it comes up in conversation that that's what I use, whereas they just look at a dial on the front of something.
So is this better than Facebook and Twitter for you?
I don't do Facebook and Twitter.
You don't need it?
I don't need it. And actually, I have absolutely no respect for it. I mean, maybe it's a generational thing, but, you know, I say I grew up with a brain.
I think there's a lot of people might agree with you on that. Some will disagree, I'm sure, as well. Terry, it's been great talking to you. You know, for all amateur radio enthusiasts out there, give us the call sign again that they should be listening
Golf
out for.
Royal 150 National Institute Blind. Now, it is a great hobby for blind people, and we want to try, by appointment, people are encouraged, you know, vision impaired people who are interested, whether there's any interest through Connect, and I'll be dealing with Susan Byrne on this. If people want to come round by arrangement and watch this in action, then they are welcome to do so. One of the conditions of my getting the call sign, theoretically I'm supposed to open my home up to the public. Well, I'm not actually doing that.
No.
What we will do, though, is try to get the message to as many blind people as possible. And so that if vision-impaired people through Connect want to come and watch an amateur radio station in action, then they're welcome to do so by arrangement.
They can also come and watch me in action, because there's a true amateur. Terry, it's been great talking to you. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
Now, every week on The Daily Connect, we always bring you a story about guide dogs and their owners. Well, this week we thought we'd maybe spin it around a little bit. One of our producers caught hold of a very interesting story and dropped in to the show to tell us about it. Barry joins me now. Barry Snell is one of our producers here at RNIB Connect Radio. And Barry, you found, a rather interesting but rather harrowing story online, didn't you?
Yeah, thanks, Stephen. I found the story online and I thought I'd chase it up. Basically, it's a story about a woman called Katie Orton. Katie founded an organisation to help blind and partially sighted dogs. Here's Katie to explain.
We rescue blind and partially sighted dogs from the UK and all over Europe as well. So dogs who, for whatever reason, have lost their sight. They may have been born blind, so it could be from breeders in the UK, or it could be through cruelty in Europe. So, and we find them loving homes. We get them the treatment they need, make sure they're safe, and then find them loving homes in the UK.
I asked Katie how she ended up doing this.
I was lucky enough to work in the Cayman Islands for a couple of years, many years ago, and I adopted a blind dog who had been blinded in an acid attack. And I'd never had a blind dog before, but she was absolutely incredible. She would swim in the sea with me, and I really realised how, you know, what an incredible life blind dogs could have. And sadly, when she died, I tried to adopt another blind dog, but was told by quite a few charities that they wouldn't probably would euthanise the blind dogs. They didn't think they would have a very good quality of life. So I thought it was such a shame that people didn't realise, you know, how amazing they can be. So I set up Blind Dog Rescue UK, and we've been rescuing blind dogs ever since.
Katie went on to explain to me the different kinds of dogs and varying eye conditions that they have that end up in her care.
So we have dogs who maybe through neglect have conditions like glaucoma, so untreated very high eye pressure, which is very painful. So we need to get that treated straight away. Sometimes they may need their eyes removed. In general, if they've been you know, sort of very poorly cared for or not cared for at all, they could be street dogs or shelter dogs. They can be very underweight and just need just a few months of TLC, really, and really find out what life in comfort is like, rather than kind of going from meal to meal that could be weeks apart. Dogs can also suffer from cataracts and go blind from cataracts. They can have detached retinas, the same as in people, which I believe can be treated in humans but not in dogs. So there are lots of conditions that are exactly the same in people that would cause partial or full blindness in dogs.
Stephen, some of the stories I read about the dogs that Katie ended up looking after were shocking. There was one story in particular which was quite distressing to hear about.
Little Freddy was found on a rubbish dump in Bulgaria, and he's a tiny little dog, so really not able to fend for himself at all. He was incredibly thin, had lots of skin infections, but he also had both of his eyes were missing. So we don't really know how that's happened, or whether that was done through deliberate cruelty. And we certainly have had incidents of deliberate cruelty where we've known exactly what's happened to the dog. And it was a case of getting him obviously out of there as quickly as we could and to the vets. And then he came very quickly to adoption and is a very, very happy dog now. But we do have lots of dogs who perhaps are hit by cars. Some dogs are beaten really badly, so they have really horrific injuries.
You would think that the dogs would never come back from such a traumatic experience.
But what is amazing about them is they don't seem to lose the ability to trust. So, even though they have been horribly treated, they still have the capacity to trust us again and trust us to give them, the best future. So there certainly are dogs who are scarred by what's happened physically and mentally. But I'd say, in the main, most of them are very, very resilient to what has happened and they do very well.
It was very clear to me during the interview that Katie loved what she did.
I'd say the best thing about it is being able to see a picture of a dog that's hundreds of miles away and actually know that we can make funds available, we can make sure that that person who's right there with that dog, who has no options of an RSPCA or anything like that, can take that dog to the vet, know that we will sponsor all the costs, and then that there will be a home at the end of it, because there are hundreds of dogs and they can't take them all on single-handedly, so they really do need our help.
Now, of course, it's important that people support the charity, as they don't get any government money to help them do what they do. I asked Katie how any of us could support them.
We've got lots of ways people can support us. People can volunteer with us. People can also donate if you don't have the time. All of those funds that we raise, we're completely volunteer-based, so every single penny goes to helping more and more blind dogs. If you visit us on the website, it's www.bdruk.org. You'll find we can take PayPal donations, or you can send us a cheque, or you can donate by back. So lots and lots of ways to donate.
You can hear more of that interview on our Audio Boom channel and on our social media networks as well.
Thank you so much, Barry, for coming in and telling us more about that story. A very interesting one for sure, and hopefully lots of people donate and support that organisation as well. Thank you for that, Barry. That is it for the Daily Connect podcast for today. The show's back tomorrow morning, bright and early, as usual, from 10 a.m. Well, depends how bright and early you want to be up, I guess. If you're having a lie-in, perhaps it's bright and early for you. 10 a.m. till 12 is when the show is live on RNIB Connect Radio, Freeview Channel 730, and online through your smart speaker as well. Just say play RNIB Connect Radio. The Daily Connect podcast, though, is back just after 5 o'clock. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you tomorrow. The Daily Connect podcast.